हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So then we continue. These jivas are of two types, eternally conditioned and eternally liberated. Sri Jiva Goswami says, the number of jivas is unlimited. They are divided into two classes. One class is favorable to the Lord without beginning. The other class is averse to the Lord without beginning. The first class is favorable to the Lord because of knowledge of relationship with the Lord. The second class is averse to the Lord because of lack of that knowledge. The favorable jivas are all recipients of the Lord's splendid internal energy. They are the eternal associates of the Lord, such as Garuda. They are not in the category of the Lord as is shown by the scriptures. They are still Tatasta or Jiva. The second class of jivas is devoid of the help of the internal energy, as they are averse to the Lord. Because of this lack, they are overwhelmed by Maya and take repeated birth in the material world. So here it says, the first is favorable because of knowledge of the relationship with the Lord. The second is ignorant of that. Therefore, then we can see the process of getting knowledge or acquiring knowledge or practicing that knowledge about relationship with the Lord, that's going to change the situation. Right? The jiva is in the material world because of lack of this knowledge. That means those in the spiritual world have this knowledge. So if you get this knowledge, then you go to the spiritual world. Right? It means you have the knowledge used in devotion, of course. So this knowledge then becomes very important. Relationship, that's a very important thing. Because we can say, oh, that's easy, I understand that. You know, it's just I'm servant of Krishna. But that servant means we act on that platform. So understand here would mean that they understand it and practice it. Right? That's the lifestyle. But if you understand, don't practice it, or only partially practice it, then it means you're partially conditioned. Right? So like that, then we have to find. Now we have this nice, that was Paramatma Sandarbha 47. Isn't it? And so now we have a little bit more of a... existence of so it's very long quote by Jiva Goswami. Paramatma is the spiritual sun. All the jivas are particles of his rays. The real nature of the jiva is purely spiritual. The jiva is by nature possessed of individual identity. Because of the nature of Tatastha Shakti, which emanates from the inconceivable energy of Paramatma, the jiva, being minute, is liable to fall under the control of Maya. In the verse of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna teaches that the jiva is the superior energy to Maya. And thus the jiva is not qualitatively different from Paramatma, nor is he the same. The jiva is controlled by Maya, and the Lord is the controller of Maya. Through this scriptural statement, it is understood that the jiva is simultaneously different and non-different from the Lord. The doctrine of absolute monism is not according to Vedic evidence. Right? So impersonalism actually isn't supported by the Vedic literature. It's a concept that's generated by the conditioned living entities. It's an understanding. Therefore, then we get all these different schools of thought, right, that are being applied here. Okay, so it says real nature of the jiva is purely spiritual. Right, so that's the actual nature. But due to ignorance, they don't act in that way. If the jiva is under the control of Maya, one cannot say that everything is Maya. According to the doctrine of Maya, the jiva is a temporary phenomenon, like a reflection. When we say that the jiva is controlled by Maya, it means that spiritual particle called jiva is different from Maya and is capable of falling under the influence of Maya because of its minute nature. Maya is inferior energy and the jiva is composed of superior energy. The function of Maya is material identification. The jiva is a separate category, a spiritual being. Though the jiva is absorbed in Maya, it does not lose its nature as jiva. The Mayavad philosophy is erroneous. So he's saying that they're a reflection, so they don't actually exist. But if they don't exist, what's the problem? You know what I'm saying? If it's all actually just an illusion, why all the complaint? Is it just an illusion anyway? So if your dissatisfaction is all illusion, why even worry about it? You know? Second is that they say the jiva falls under control of Maya, but if it's a reflection and it's all Maya anyway, how is it it falls under? It means there was a time when it wasn't. Right? Or that it can be under and not under. That means it's separate from Maya. Right? Otherwise, it would just be Maya, just another manifestation of Maya. If it's another manifestation of Maya, why are we worried? You know what I'm saying? So this philosophy is not actually supported by the Vedic literatures. Right? So this is a difficulty. But it was used, the Mayavad, to bring people from Buddhism, which didn't accept the Vedas, back to accepting the Vedas. And once that Vedic culture is established again, in a better situation than it was before Lord Buddha came, then you can reintroduce Vaishnava philosophy. Right? So this is just, you know, the leftovers. Opinion of those contaminated by this error are ridiculous. According to them, Brahman is one, uncontaminated. How is it possible that this Brahman becomes divided? Right? If Brahman is undivided, how does it become divided? Right? So they're trying to say it's all Brahman. So if it's all Brahman, why is there Maya? Why is there this differentiation? Because they can't understand Maya is also Brahman. Right? We say it's all Brahman. Right? But they'll say is, you know, there's Brahman and then there's Maya. That's why they're called Mayavadis. Right? Because they have this opinion, they have this philosophy of Maya, which is different. We say there's Krishna and his energies. How can there be any freedom from fear once the jiva has attained oneness? Right? Because if it can happen, what's the guarantee it won't happen again? If it can become divided, then there'll be the fear that you might come back here again. But if everything's one, what do you care in the first place? But since you do care, therefore, that's why the problem is being addressed. The examples of the rope and snake, shell and silver are inappropriate. Rather than prove the concept of Advaita, they defeat it. If one tries to say that Maya dissolves in Brahman, the concept of absolute Advaita fails. Because if absolute Advaita means there would be no Maya. Right? Because it's dissolving for one individual, but it's not dissolving for the other individuals, so it's still two. Like that. So instead of being the Lord and the Jiva, it's the Lord and Maya. You know, because the jiva is supposedly become the Lord. So you still end up with two. Yeah. So it's a problem for them. If one argues that Maya is desire, how does that desire act? By whose desire does Maya act? If Brahman is the source of this desire, then Brahman is not unchanging. If one maintains the changeless nature of Brahman and existence of the desire of Maya, then there arises another being opposing Brahman, which divides up the desireless Brahman. That is a great disaster for Brahman. Right? So now you have this Brahman, and it's just existing in a oneness. Then you have this Maya. So now if Brahman has created this Maya, then there is still two anyway. And if it hasn't, then this Brahman, this Maya is just taking control of this Brahman and dividing it up. That means the Maya is actually stronger than Brahman. Now, interesting to note, just at this point, this particular concept, that in world religions, this is also a popular concept. Right? That there are, though there's the devil that can act separately than can the control of God. Right? He's not under the control of God. Right? So they don't understand. They say God is the greatest, and then they create a being that God can't control. Right? Just because they can't explain free will and karma. So then they come up with these, which is a worse concept. Right? Better karma and all these other things that are metaphysical and all that, then therefore seem like it's, you know, whatever it is, some kind of ghosts and goblins or something like that. Somehow their ignorance of not knowing is considered better than, you know, dealing with ignorance. Or whatever. So it's interesting to note that when ignorance is there, then they can't differentiate like this. So it's similar. The similar concept. Right, that's probably why in the West it's so easy for them to take up the Mayavad philosophy. Because there's a similar concept. God has no form, and there's, you know, the devil is, you know, controlling everything and putting everyone in the same kind of bad situation. Like that. That's kind of a little close to the pillar, I think. Also, see, like that, is if something falls off, where is it going to fall?
On the carpet.
Yeah, so that means the pot moves, not the carpet. If one imagines that Brahman becomes Ishwara and then creates the world of Maya, in the absence of independent desire of Brahman, it means that Brahman becomes unfortunately controlled by one of its energies. Thus, Mayavad is an unauthorized doctrine contrary to all the Vedas. By material logic, the non-material subject of the Vedas becomes lost. Right? So, through that material logic and viewpoint, then the actual transcendental position of the Vedas becomes lost. So even though they claim to be transcendentalists, they're not actually. Right, so Brahman becomes Ishwara and creates the world. So that means, then he takes, that's desire. But Brahman has no desire. You know, so that's a problem. And if he has created it, then you put, now we're dealing again that Brahman is desireless. So now it becomes controlled by this Maya. Right? So it wasn't control of the Maya by having created it, but now it is not. And what's the difference in the two positions? Right? Is us. If Brahman before creates it, it has nothing to do with us, but now by us, we will conquer that and go back. So now it's in our opinion that therefore Brahman has no desire. You know what I'm saying? So that means then we're also putting ourselves in a position of, you know, dictating what is the nature of Brahman. Right? So this is the problem. The thing becomes completely speculative, just mundane concepts. Does that make sense? If a person has faith in the Lord's inconceivable energy, his knowledge becomes perfect. Accepting that Brahman is non-dual and changeless, if one also accepts that Brahman has inconceivable energy, both the changeless state and desire can harmoniously coexist and act without contradiction. Right, so that means here's where getting the if one has faith in the Lord and his energy, then all this works very nicely, because he can be desireless and independent at the same time he can have created these energies. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because he's non-dual, he's changeless, that means all these manifestations are non-different from him, but at the same time, they are different. So that's the difficulty with that philosophy, it's only dealing with the oneness. So they can't explain the difference, right? The oneness is not a problem. What they define and what we define actually is the same. Because they're only talking about Brahman, and it's all Brahman, we'll also agree with the same thing. You know, it's like saying this whole, whether it's the columns or the arches or the walls, it's all brick. You know, so everything's Brahman, it's all Krishna and his potency, so it's all Brahman. We say the same thing. Their problem comes is they can't define the duality that is there. Because then you have the Lord, you have Maya, you have the Jivas. That's where they can't define it. Right? So they have nothing for the dual aspect. Right? So then this becomes a problem for them. But so then we can define both. Because the other philosophies, they define that there's the, means Madhuva described, there's two, but that's good enough for a relationship. You don't need to really understand the oneness. Because relationship's going to happen because there's two people. Right? And, or Vishishtadvait, Vishuddhadvait, they describe the oneness, special oneness, purified oneness, the oneness in the purpose, oneness in the mood, that aspect of it, but it's still in connection with relationship. The purpose of the relationship is the same. Well, Madhu's point is there's a relationship. You know? Like that. And then you have, it's one, it's two. You can look at it this way, you can look at it that way. Right? So then the Vaishnavas can explain it, and it works properly. Right? But to be able to deal on the platform of Braj, then it has to be simultaneously one and different. So that explains everything to the most degree, because in Braj, then you have to have something where God is controlled by his devotees. You know, at the same time, he's independent. You know? The others have a glimpse of this, a touch of this. You can mention these things and they do appreciate it. But it still goes back to the Lord and his greatness, his majesty. Does that make sense? So here, both the changeless and the desire can't exist simultaneously. Krishna can have desire to interact, but at the same time be completely independent and have no need to fulfill. They can work at the same time. The Vedas say, sa aiksha, he glanced. This statement illustrates that by the Lord's desire alone, his inconceivable energy creates the material energy. The jivas and the spiritual energies... This statement illustrates that by the Lord's desire alone, his inconceivable energy creates the material energy, the jivas, and the spiritual energy. Okay, so this inconceivable energy, this is what we were talking before, your chit shakti. It's the whole thing, so it creates all these other aspects. Because it's one shakti, and then from that it has all these different parts. And then within that, then those act according to, then these are influenced by the sambit, sandini, ladini. If one believes in this inconceivable energy, his doubts will be dispelled. Right? So he says before, if a person has faith in the Lord's inconceivable energy. So there we're taking it as generic, his inconceivable energy, like that. But here it's being specific. This is inconceivable energy, that's what's doing everything. If one believes in this inconceivable energy, his doubts will be dispelled. In the words, naham manye, suvedeti, no na vedeti, veda cha. I do not think I know Brahman well. I know and I do not know. Of the Kena Upanishad, the inconceivable energy is accepted. In the statement, dva suparna, two birds in a tree, the eternal difference is taught. And in tattvamasi, you are that, eternal non-difference is taught. So we're dealing with the difference, the non-difference, and the inconceivable potency. Right? So when that's understood, then you actually have a basis, you know, in the philosophy. There's no contradiction anywhere in the perfect Vedas. Thus, the Vedas conclude that the existence of, and I can't say what comes next because it's not on the piece of paper. It's not on the back, I don't find it. You can complain to the editor like that. You have to. Yeah, because we don't have that page that has all the... I don't know. Why, you have it? I would ask later. If you go now, then you'll miss the class. Chapter 7, the Jiva in Maya. What's after the Jiva in Maya? Okay, the Jiva's liberation from Maya. Okay, so that was the generic position of the soul, right? His nature. So now we're going to talk about the Jiva that is conditioned. The Jiva's quality of tattvastha was discussed in the previous chapter. Because of this quality, the Jiva, devoid of knowledge of the Lord, becomes overcome by Maya, situated close by. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is written, apart from the ever-liberated devotees, there are the conditioned souls who always turn away from the service of the Lord. They are perpetually conditioned in this material world and are subjected to the material tribulations brought about by different bodily forms and hellish conditions. Due to his being opposed to Krishna consciousness, the conditioned soul is punished by the witch of the external energy, Maya. He is thus ready to suffer the threefold miseries, miseries brought about by the body and mind, the inimical behavior of other living entities, and natural disturbances caused by the demigods. In this way, the conditioned soul becomes the servant of lusty desires, and when these are not fulfilled, he becomes a servant of anger and continues to be kicked by the external energy, Maya. Wandering and wandering throughout the universe, he may, by chance, get the association of a devotee physician, whose instructions and hymns make the witch of external energy flee. The conditioned soul thus gets into touch with the devotional service of Lord Krishna, and in this way he can approach near and nearer to the Lord. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 22:12-15. Notice here he always says he, right? So this is because the living entity thinks that they are Purusha, that they are God. Therefore, that's the identification. Does that make sense? So therefore, it's generic. It's not meaning those in male bodies. It means the Jiva in the material world. He thinks, you know, he's a he. That's the problem. Otherwise, if we were being technically correct, the Jiva is an energy, so we'd say she. But it's not. It always uses the term he. Why? Because the Jiva, though feminine, thinks they're masculine. So it doesn't matter what form they're in. They think they're the controller and enjoyer. Yeah? The Svetta Supatara Upanishad speaks of the Jiva in bondage. Though the Jiva is situated in the material body, it is a subtle entity, non-material in nature. Even if the tip of a hair is divided up 100 times, and one part is divided again 100 times, it cannot compare to the minuteness of the soul. Svetta Sutara Upanishad 5.9. So even here it's saying, even 1/10,000, the tip of the hair, still is not small enough. But, you know, whatever, well, you know, it's a good enough, give you an idea, right? So, because if we said it's less than that, you might get really too worried, right? Though the Jiva situated in matter is weak, he is still non-material, equipped with immortal qualities. So the Jiva is superior energy, but we have to acknowledge the size of the material energy. Therefore, he's easily conditioned. Okay, then in next quote, only the Jiva's material body is characterized as male and female, or neuter. The jiva dwells in the body obtained as a result of past actions. So it is Uttara Upanishad 5.10. The jiva is actually a spiritual entity. By external vision, jiva may appear as male or female, but that is not the real nature of jiva. Then from the next verse. The jiva takes many types of material bodies according to his actions, through his desires, touch, sight, illusion, eating, water, and rain. Okay. The jiva attains numerous forms of gross and subtle bodies through qualities he develops. And through the quality of action and self, he becomes covered by other bodies. Right. So, you have qualities, so you attain one body. Then by the activities you do in that body, you obtain the next. Does that make sense? So that way, then, it's always going on. And so all these different things are happening, how he takes it. Because of his desires, because what he touches, what he sees, you know, he wants that or likes that or this and that, so it changes the desire, so that then creates the new body. Illusion, because of his illusion, then that creates the different kinds of forms. Eating, what he eats, you are what you eat, so you eat something you shouldn't eat, you become something you shouldn't be, right? Water and rain, so then also then, how you say, the rain, then they fall from the heavenly planets to the earth through the rain, like this, so then these elements, so all these have an effect on the living entity. The jiva, okay, then the next, oh no. The jiva attains numerous forms of gross and subtle bodies through the qualities he develops. And through the quality of action and self, he becomes covered by other bodies. Swetas Uttara Upanishad 22. Then the next. The jiva, having fallen into the deep hole of repeated birth in the material world, develops faith by taking shelter of devotees. When he understands Paramatma as the creator of the universe, dwelling in the universe and acting as the source of unlimited avatars, he becomes free from the bondage of Maya. Swetas Uttara Upanishad 5.13. In the Amnaya Sutras 35-38, the conditioned jiva is described thus. This is really good. Amnaya Sutras are another book by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Amnaya Sutras, then they deal with the this Achit Ishwara, then bhakti and prema, according to Upanishadic formula, like that. So there's 10 verses on each of these 5 items, so then 50 verses. So in that is the complete philosophy, right? So that then becomes... Being averse to the Lord, the jiva becomes absorbed in ignorance. Because of this, they forget their true identity or form. Having forgotten their identity from selfish enjoyment and action, they accept terrible restriction or bondage. Right? So their identity from selfish enjoyment or action, that then makes them forget. The result of that is then more bondage. Identification of self with gross and subtle material bodies is the cause of their suffering in the world. So you can see these are all the sutras. They come through like that. Yeah. The jiva is a spiritual, conscious, knowing entity. The jiva appeared by the marginal energy at the dividing line between spirit and matter. Just appeared. Those jivas who were attracted somewhat to realization of the Supreme Person became desirous of the spiritual realm because of that contact of knowledge. They then obtained strength from the Haladini potency of the abundant Chit Shakti, which made them favorable to the Lord eternally, and they were brought into the spiritual world as associates of the Lord. Very clear. No? Is that clear? Right, so that means they appeared by the marginal energy at the dividing line. Then at that dividing line, then some are attracted by somewhat to realization of the Supreme. So then it says by the strength and Mahalini potency, they become favorable. So that means by the association of those devotees of the internal potency, right, or under the internal potency, then they develop that faith by which then they come fully under the protection of the internal potency. Right? So then they become the eternal associates. Those who, by their own free will, so now we say they're called eternally liberated. Right? But this eternal liberation doesn't mean that it started on the platform of prema. It just means they weren't conditioned. Does that make sense? No. Means here. Those jivas who are from that position, he began to gaze at the spiritual and material worlds. Right? Then, those jivas who are attracted somewhat to realization of the Supreme Person, says somewhat attracted, became desirous of the spiritual realm because of that contact of knowledge. Right? They then obtained strength from the Hladini potency of the abundant Chit-Shakti, which made them favorable to the Lord eternally, and they were brought into the spiritual world as associates of the Lord. So it made them eternally on that position. So because they had never been conditioned, then they're considered always liberated. Right? But then it made them favorable eternally, and they were brought into the spiritual world. So they became favorable. Right? They were inclined towards it, but then they were made on that platform. You understand? In other words, we're discussing the word here, this anadi business, you know, that creates so much problem for those who are so attached to words. Right? So this anadi means it's always laws like that. Right? So when we say eternally liberated and eternally bound, so just as those who are eternally liberated were always liberated, but were not on the platform of prema, they weren't an eternal associate, then they become one. So in the same way as the jiva starts off that way and then goes the other way. You know what I'm saying? So that eternal doesn't mean every last, you know, nanosecond. It means, you know, there's a process, and then when they come to one situation or the other, they've been that way since time immemorial. So how do you count that? So if you can't count that, then it's eternal. Does that make sense? Right? Because that means we're people, always have been people, and the reason we're here is our own foolishness. All these other things are actually so that we don't feel so foolish. Does that make sense? All these other definitions, because if we're from Brahman or this or that, then we're okay. You know what I'm saying? Because even if they say you don't fall from the spiritual world, still, how was there a distinction between what the jivas that went, you know, to the spiritual world and those that came to the material world? How do you define that? Why would there be, if everyone's coming from Brahman, how would that happen? How would they be able to see them both, and then, because it says they start to gaze on both, right? What's the term? From that position, he began to gaze at the spiritual and material worlds. So that means there, that position, that border, you have to be able to see both. You know saying? So this can't be defined by those. All they want to say is, yes. Five levels of envy, yes.
One is doubtfulness. Second is to minimize the Lord as a potency of this world, in part of one's karma. Third is to not accept the transcendental form of the Lord. Fourth is to think the jiva is from the material world. And five is to absence of mercy. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it, so how would that fit into the what we're discussing now, in terms of the jiva is not part of the material world. It's
because you just said that that's part of envy, is to think he's from here. You know what I'm saying? So my point is that so much discussion happens on where the jiva is falling from. But what does it matter, really? Because what happens is they split things up because one says it's Golok and the other says, well, you can't fall from there. But that's still not an argument. The point is you're here and that you got here by making this mistake. You can see the spiritual, you can see the material, you make this mistake. You understand? So it says they become inimical. So you become inimical by not acting. You act, then it becomes good. You don't act, you become inimical. Does that make sense? Those who, by their own free will, notice own free will, became bewildered and became greedy for Maya, situated on the opposite side. Being beckoned by Maya, here's the more fun. Situated on the opposite side. Being beckoned by Maya, they became attracted to the material universe and were thrown in the universe by Karanarna Vasai Vishnu, the controller of Maya. That was but the result of their eternal aversion to the Supreme Lord. The moment they entered the material realm, notice that they became overcome by ignorance, the function of Maya. Overcome by ignorance, they fell into the wheel of binding karma in order to become fully absorbed in their task. So that means there's a process by which he actually comes under the control of Maya. That means he didn't start under her control. So you say nitya badha, but he came into it, then he's eternally conditioned. Like that. Okay, so now he's thrown in. That was because of the eternal aversion to the Lord. How you say is... And experience, the jiva, when they have experiences, they're fully absorbing the experience, whatever it may be. There's that element of concept of eternity. Am I saying? You're happy, you think it'll go on forever. You know, and then there's the point where you get reminded that it's not. So as children you cry, and as adults then it's kind of like, oh yeah, you know. You know, it's like, oh yeah, I've got to go to bed tomorrow, you know. Does that make sense? So there's that concept of that. So in the jiva's mind, then if he's not attracted by the Lord, then that mood then takes on that eternal effect. Does that make sense? Then it actually comes to pass that he is in that position, and then he's stuck there. That makes sense. Because, right. Yeah. Such jivas have been compared to a bird enjoying the fruits of karma. Kiradakshaya Vishnu and the jiva are living like friends in the tree of the temporary material world. The jiva is eating the fruits of the tree according to his karma. The other bird, Paramatma, is not enjoying the fruit but serving as witness. Svetasutara Upanishad 4.6. And... it seems to Mukunda Upanishad 3.1.1, they have exactly the same verse.
Mundaka. Then, Mundaka or Mukunda?
Mundaka. In the same tree, the jiva, bewildered by Maya, has fallen into lamentation. Svetasutara Upanishad 4.7 and Mundaka Upanishad 3.1.2. It is written in the Srimad Bhagavatam, being averse to knowledge of God, the jiva becoming absorbed in the second principle, material ignorance, then experienced fear of repeated birth, misidentified himself with the material body, viparyaya, and fell into forgetfulness of his true form, asmriti. as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's translation. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.237. Okay, so averse to knowledge of the Lord. So in other words, there's knowledge of the Lord, he could get attracted to that. But he wasn't attracted to that, so he got attracted to Maya. Does that make sense? So knowledge of the Lord means you're there and you hear about Krishna, hear about his activities and that. So then there are those that are interested in it. You know, Maya, oh wow, what's that? So then by that, then they'll further progress. Then they'll get the association of the eternal associates who are fully absorbed in pure love for Krishna. Then that will naturally, by association, develop in the jiva. Then they come to the platform of being an eternal associate. Then they go to the spiritual world. Okay? Does that make sense? But the other is that he may hear about, but he's not. There's no interest or attraction. Right? So this lack of interest or attraction, that can also be counted as eternal. Because there was no interest otherwise, and so you're only liberated if you're in relationship to Krishna. You're not in a relationship with Krishna, you're not liberated. So then that way also you could say the jiva is then eternally conditioned, because he's in the tatastha position, and on hearing about Krishna, he didn't go, oh, that's interesting. Right? So he's starting from the neutral position. But from the neutral, you have to go one way or the other, right? No fence-sitters. You're either for us or against us, right? You know, there's nothing else. And so then the one takes up and moves in that direction. The other one is not interested. So therefore, you have to be interested in something, right? There must be some desire. There must be some action. There must be some goal. So if it's not Krishna, then it's got to be Maya. Right? You have two choices. You have these two rocks here. Choose one or the other. As soon as you choose one, means the other one is, you know, like that. Or which one don't you want? Oh, I don't want that one, so it means you automatically get this one. Right? So in other words, they're both given the choice. One takes, okay, I'll take that one. And the other one is, I don't want that one. You know, I'm not interested in that one. So if you're not interested in that one, there's only one other option. And that's Maya. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, Krishna consciousness is simply wanting Krishna, wanting to know Krishna, wanting to establish oneself back in that position. If that's there, because it mentions it's just an interest, a slight, attracted somewhat to realization of the Supreme Person, became desirous of the spiritual realm because of that contact of knowledge. Right. Yes.
What you said just now is to answer this often the question that the devotees often ask. How is possible that in the spiritual world we were attracted by Maya?
Why not?
No, because you just said that it's not that attracted by Maya, but it's just...
Not attracted by Krishna. So therefore, automatically, the other comes to pass. Yeah. The thing is they're saying, well, how could I not be attracted by Krishna? And then... what do they do the rest of the day? You know what I'm saying? It's going on right now, so it's the same thing. Gopis heard about Krishna, and that's all they wanted. Like that. We hear about Krishna, well, that's nice, and then, you know, an hour later we're doing something else. You know? It's like, what do you call it? So I used to see these... the one form, I'm not sure what they're called technically, but it's one form of these Indian magpies. They're like cousins of them. Like that. So they get together, you know, because magpies, they make so many sounds. So I've seen it a few times. They'll somehow or another get down to each other, next to each other. And their beaks are maybe like an inch apart from each other. And they'll be making so many sounds, you know, just constant sounds. And they'll be swinging their heads back and forth, you know, it's kind of in the opposite directions, like this. It's just going on like that. And then at one moment, something catches their eye like a bug, and then they both just walk off and go like this and that. You know, they're having this great conversation, and then just, you know, one bug gone. You know, they don't say, oh, hey, excuse me, because they're just gone, like that. You know? So that's the point, is that one could go on that way. But we're so conditioned the other way that even we come and come, this is great and nice, that's what keeps us going. But then so easily you get distracted. That's the Tathasta position. So it's only when you obtain strength from the Hladini potency, right? Then that makes them favorable to the Lord. Then they were brought into the spiritual world as associates. Right? So this is getting really, really fine. So that means the situation in Braj, because it's like we're sitting in Mayapur. It is the spiritual world, but at the same time, there's this thin covering of Maya, right? That we can see it otherwise. So that means that one has to be situated in the spirit in Vrindavan, in between the spiritual dham itself and that thin coating, that thin layer, right? And one can see both. One can see the spiritual nature, one can see the material. One then has an interest, a slight inclination in the spiritual. And so then by association, that deepens to the point where they become an eternal associate. And the other one sees that, and then is interested in that, and then crosses to that. Does that make sense? Because then even here, and without a Chintabheda Veda Tattva, how do you explain this aspect? Because otherwise it's still a problem that we're in the spiritual world. One is that spiritual world has to mean Goloka, it can't mean anything else. You know, that's by, you know, our locative definition of the spiritual world. Then, even if we accept that, you know, okay, you know, Vrindavan, where Krishna has his pastimes, is the spiritual world. Because Bhagavatam talks about it like that, and that's where the pastimes happen. So then, even if it happens there, we have to be right in the spiritual world. So then how can you fall? But it says Tathasta is what's in between. So that means you're situated there and in between, like we're situated now. We can see the spiritual, we can see the material. So we're still in the same position. Just now our condition is a little bit more obvious, our situation. But the other one is not. You're not conditioned, so there's no problems. Right? So, you know, the existence is okay. So there's no inspiration. It's not like now is inspiration that this place is bad. You know, we want to go to the spiritual world. But there, they're already situated between. So they're fine. They're not suffering. You know what I'm saying? So they could either take it up, oh, that's interesting, and then there's that spark, that life, and then moving in that direction. Or they're not interested. So therefore, then that spark or light will generate in the material energy. Does that make some sense? So we're dealing with very fine, fine lines here. Yes?
Sometimes the question that if we do get back, what's the guarantee we won't come back again?
Why would we come back again?
Because we're still detached, we're still...
Yeah, but if you're in the fire of the internal potency, why would you?
Because you're gaining strength from there, you're going to be able to stay there.
Yeah. So why you wouldn't stay there? Second is you've been to the material world, so it's been there, done that. It's not like you forget. It's just not very interesting. You know what I'm saying? It's just like if, you know, it's like if we could go through the whole day and you're not going to remember how you picked your nose this morning. But if I ask you about it, you can remember if you need to. But it's not of great significance, so it doesn't, what did you do today? You don't go through, well, I picked my nose and then, you know, I cleaned my finger and I washed it and then I wiped it on my chutter, you know, down in this corner over here, but I wasn't sure. You know, then I was thinking maybe this corner, should I have done it on my dhoti instead? You know, I mean, you know, like that. And so that was the first 15 seconds of my day. You know, you want to hear the other, you know, second by second, you know, blow the next thing, you know. Then I went down and I grabbed the pump and I pulled it up and then I pushed it down and then I pulled it up again and I pushed it down. You know what I'm saying? You're going to take what is absorbing of interest. So in the spiritual world, what goes on there, that's interesting. What happened in the material world, none of it was very interesting. Yes?
Can we assume then that the entity is situated as a marginal situation and they're seeing both? It sounds like they must both be equally attractive, somehow or another.
They're not equally attractive. It's that the one is the natural position, so that's actually very attractive. The other one, because you're not interested in it, since you have to do something, that's the only other. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say, something is there. Let us just take the element of, just in principle, of dealing with something else. Is, let's say you're interested in one thing. You know, there's two things. You're interested in one, but that's not available. So then what happens? You develop an interest in the other. You know, you have to be practical. You know, you wanted to eat this. You have two things to eat, but you're hungry. The one's not available, therefore you eat the other. So in the same kind of principle is that the natural position is to serve Krishna, to be interested in the spiritual. But if you don't do that, there's only one other alternative. So that's that.
One takes some effort, the other one doesn't.
Yeah.
Basically. So if you're kind of lazy, that's the kind of, it's just a matter of laziness.
That's ignorance.
Yeah.
Because knowledge means action.
Right.
So because there was interest, therefore there was that little bit of endeavor. Therefore, any little endeavor, the associates, Lord's eternal associates, then they pull you in. There's any inkling. So if there's a spark, they'll fan it. But if there's no spark, there's nothing to fan. So that's all. So then, therefore, then there has to be a spark. So you get a material spark, and then Maya fans that for you. Right? You know, she's good at that, so you don't have to worry. You know, because the point is why aren't you interested? It's the natural position, so therefore those who aren't naturally interested, then, no. You know, it's like, was that, I forget what it was, is that, I don't know about the whole thing, is that someone had come down and they're showing all the different places. You know, and they come to this one place where everybody is, you know, they said this is hell and everybody's sitting around. They're sitting in the water, you know, in some water or something like that or something like that. But they're all sitting there and drinking tea and eating stuff like that. So then the guy thinks, well, this is not so bad. Yeah, I'll stay here. And then as soon as he says that, then the guy in charge says, all right, tea breaks over, everybody back on their heads. You know, so it's kind of, you know, that element is there. So it seems like it's nice, but that's the advertising, right? Like that, good advertising. She's good at advertising. It looks good, but it never, you never get what you, you know, it's like what you order, you know, it's never quite, you know, you get the big box and inside there's some little dinky thing. You know, it's always like that, so. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Now you can mention it to Freaky Moshai. Thank you.